Hi, Stuart. Thanks. Paul Tomaszewski with the Secure Remote Payment Council. And I guess this is an easy question. It's for anyone or everyone. Big question is, at this stage of development here, how do you determine, how do your organizations determine when somebody's a competitor or when you should be cooperating with them? So Victor, for example, talked about the wonderful application of RDC. I would suppose, Jody, you might be not all that keen about that, since that still keeps the check in the picture, yet you said you provide some of the rails for Victor's product. Dixon, you know, folks, some folks would say you're competing against other products. And back in the day, when I grew up in the payments business, what you're doing would have been against Visa and MasterCard rules. You'd be called a factor, and they wouldn't allow you to do that. And then Peter, I guess, you're in a whole different world over there that's very interesting, and it seems like you've taken cooperation to a different level, but I'm sure there's still some competitive issues. So I'd just like to get some thoughts in that one particular question. Thank you.
I'll start. I mean, you know, I think that mobile, because it's such a unique space, offers the ability to have partnerships and cooperation maybe in other traditional areas where you cannot. So you do see, you know, a collection of a bank and a telco and a network all coming together, and they might also be competitors in other areas. So I think that certain of those laws start to get broken down. But, you know, your core business has to be whatever your core business is. And so whatever rules you mentioned for MasterCard years ago, PayPal is not in violation of our rules. So I think that it also shows you that the payments landscape is changing. And so when you change, you also have to reconsider who you want to be in business with and who your customers are. I mean, MasterCard's, you know, basic model is that our customers are financial institutions that issue our cards and sign up merchants to take our cards. But we have a lot of other unique partnerships, and we also have other customers, and there are customers in the merchant community. There's customers in other payment chains. And so I think that those sort of, you know, clear boxes of what we do is starting to break down as payments have become more innovative.
I think, you know, from our perspective, you know, mobile is a game changer, right? And like every other market or game changer, there will be shakeout, right? So people, you'll either evolve or you'll become irrelevant and become antiquated, and there'll be displacement. I mean, some business models and some businesses will be displaced. We've got a very large relationship with MasterCard. We're on some more of their cutting edge platforms, doing some very exciting things with them on debit. We're talking to Dixon more now than ever, looking to expand some things. But, you know, for us, it's easy, right? I have that simple model, right? Serve more members, meet more needs. We generally take that approach on everything. If something gets in the way, we'll do it ourselves. If people aren't cooperating, we'll build it ourselves. Within the bounds of regulations, when it comes to moving money, if we don't have the right partners, then we'll, you know, there's usually more than one partner at the table, right, when it comes to these types of solutions. It's just a matter of finding the right one. When none exists, you have to create your own life.
Yeah, I think that, first of all, we try to be friends with everyone. So, and in the early days, we had to, because everyone had the perspective that we were competing against them and perceived we were breaking all sorts of rules. And as time shows, we are not. We're fully compliant. You know, this is an industry of competition. So your partner is your competitor, right? And that's kind of an interesting, dynamic that we understand fully at PayPal, and it's something that I think serves us well, and I think it would serve the industry well, that those two things aren't orthogonal and that they can actually live together. As a network of networks, everyone's our partner. But in reality, yes, we are in one way or another taking share from one or other entities, but Jody will tell you that in some conversations we may be competing for customer mind share, but in many cases we're one of MasterCard's largest merchants, so we are one of their largest customers, and they are a valuable partner to us.
Well, I already have answered this question in my presentation, but I want to answer with a nice example. We wanted to bring the banks together and the mobile network operators. So I asked all our competitors, mobile network operators, and it's the mobile business is a very, very competitive business, to bring them on the table. And the big bosses for the payments in the four Austrian universal banks, who cover almost 80% of the market share. and that brought them together. And there was a big misunderstanding. Everybody said, yeah, that's a great model. Use Maestro as an authorization model. Use mobile as an authentication model. That's a great idea. Let's do that. And then at the end of the meeting, I asked, okay, so let's meet. And we as a mobile network understood next week to do the next step. And the bank said, maybe in half a year we have time to discuss that. We have risk issues and whatever. So it's a matter of different cultures popping together. And concerning your question, why this fails, the banks, they did not really succeed in that. All these successful models that are out there, like PayPal, this is not made by a bank. It's always made by somebody else, but not banks. And this should make the banks learn about that.
Yes.
Hi, I'm Gail Hillebrand from Consumer Junior. My question is for Peter Lohman. You've told us about the 100 euro concert ticket and what happens on the front end. Tell us where the money moves after, in particular. How long does it take for the merchant to get the money? What happens if the authenticated customer says it really wasn't me? Are they stuck? What happens if the customer doesn't pay the phone bill?
Well, simple answer. Mobile network operators, if mobile network operators don't know how to bill and how to pay their customers, and if they don't understand these processes, then if they don't do it, they can't do it for one day. The CDRs, convert the CDRs in money. If they don't know how to do that for one day, then they lose 1/365th of the turnover of a mobile network operator. So you see, this is core business of a mobile network operator. Billing and payment is core business of a mobile network operator. And our bad debt quotas and our risk management team is very good in that. And I would say that it's even better than some credit card organization when it comes to internet payments and digital payments. So we have learned these processes. We went through that. From the process, it's quite simple. We take the money from the phone bill, which is the fifth working days of the second month, because up to then we don't know if it's billed or not. We have 18 billing cycles within Mobilcom, and we pay the merchant as all the other, because we are competitive with the credit card companies with the same processes as the other credit card companies. Because the merchants say, if we have it from MasterCard, we want the same process, we want the same payment scheme.
The merchant gets paid after the phone bill is paid and not
no,
before?
No, before.
Before.
Because on the fifth working day, we take the money from the customer.
Yeah, Richard. There's another one right here, second row.
Thank you. Richard Krohn, CEO of Krohn Consulting, LLC. As we know, the one who enrolls is the one who controls in mobile. And building an enrolled base of customers is quite difficult. Right now, the telecom operators are the only one with a complete enrolled base knowing the mobile credentials. So what I'm curious is, for a financial institution, for a network of networks, how do you build your enrolled base of customers? If we look at USAA, only until recently were you even asking for mobile numbers on your new account applications. Same for PayPal. And for a network, MasterCard doesn't carry the mobile credentials inside the PAN or PIN or anything along those lines. So I'm very curious, for the financial institutions in attendance, for merchants, for any business, and for their regulators, how do we build and maintain securely the mobile credentials?
You know, for us, it's a little different, right? Although our members trust us with everything. They give us more data and more information about themselves, what they're doing, how they're doing it, than I think just about anybody else. So even though we weren't asking for it, they were still giving it to us. So it was, okay, maybe we need to organize this a little more. You know, we have one of the most incredible IT security programs that are out there. So it was a really easy adoption once we started to do it, to make sure we had it and we're using it to the for the right reason.
So the start was asking
for it? Yeah, they were giving it to us without asking, right? That's one of the great things about having a membership base like ours. They trust us with those things. So even they give us a lot without volunteering.
So with a product like MoneySend, you're launching a product where you're basically telling people that you want them to be able to send funds to and from through their cell phones. And we've launched this in 17 countries. You're right. This is not information, well, the network doesn't have personal information about you, period. The partners that you do this with and the banks that are offering this, they do have to get that information. So if you go to sign up for, and I don't have the website handy, but if you want to go to sign up for Mobile Money Send for MasterCard, you're going to be asked for your cell phone. So it's at that point that you're going to be given that information. Now, again, one of the things I mentioned is a challenge, and what's happened in Austria is very unique. Here, we do have a lack of cooperation between banks and telcos, which I think is a huge problem. But you do have banks that have those same customers. Maybe they don't have their cell phones or their mobile phones yet. If you want that operability, if you want that capability, if you want that service, you're going to give your cell phone number, and then you're going to have your bank is going to have that along with all the other personal information that your bank already has.
We are approaching quite simple. We are looking for value add for our customers. And if you stand in front of a parking meter and you don't have coins, then in this moment of truth, you want to solve this problem. But you don't care of MasterCard, Maestro, whatever, and PayPal, and you just want to pay your parking so that you're not fined. And if you see an ad of Robbie Williams and you know that within 2 hours this concert is paid out, then you want to a ticket of Robbie Williams, and then we have to solve that. So we always approach with a value add for the customers, and payment is just a need for that, because without payment we can't offer these services.
Can I just say one thing before Dixon answers too, which brought to mind? What's interesting in the mobile space is also because customers want this, when consumers want something, they are willing to sign up for it and do it. I mean, I think we can all agree that consumers don't want their personal information shared from merchant to merchant. There are all kinds of things consumers don't want. But when it comes to their phone and being able to have that moment of truth where you do not want to deal with whether you have change or not, consumers will sign up for these things because they want them. And that's the difference. So that the imparting of that personal information is much more given in this space. It's a different dynamic.
We have time for one more. Yes,
ma'am. I'm sorry.
My answer was pretty much the same, same answer, which is, answer the question, what's in it for me? So you put yourself in the shoes of your customers. Why should they give you more of anything, more information, more of their financial details? And so what we work on is just answering the question, by segment, what's in it for them, and why should they enroll their mobile number in their PayPal account? And because we are an account and we're a receptacle of all sorts of information, one very simple reason we give them is we like to be able to contact you, and we know you want to be able to call us. And so there's a bit of a quid pro quo.
Hi, Susan Grant, Consumer Federation of America. I wanted to ask about fraudulent merchants and, in general, fraudulent payment recipients. And as we go from micropayments to more macro payments, I think this is going to be more of an issue. In the old days, if you were paying with just a traditional credit card, the merchant's bank, before signing that merchant up to accept it, would have to check to make sure that it was a legitimate business. But now we have new models that don't necessarily require that kind of merchant scrutiny. We've got some payment systems like PayPal that provide buyer protection, at least in the auction context. But my question is, how feasible will it be to provide that kind of protection as the systems and the recipients who use it expand? And what protection ultimately will there be for consumers if they're transmitting their money to somebody who's a fraud?
First of all, you're right. We do provide buyer protection on eBay, so within the auction context. And this year, we will be providing buyer protection across all of PayPal in the U.S. So we are extending that benefit to our membership, because it's all about what you're asking, which is how do you create a safe payment system and you encourage more transactions and more participation. On the merchant risk side, there's two sides to risk, right? You characterize it as fraudulent merchants, but there's also just credit risk. Small merchant has all the intention in the world of doing business online, bad economic times, good people do bad things in bad times, bad credit risk. So we do what most other merchant acquirers do. We do the traditional underwriting and so forth. We do lots of monitoring. And then what PayPal is known for is all of our risk and fraud detection capabilities, where we are constantly monitoring the transactions on both sides to create a safe payment network.
And I would just say for MasterCard, the beauty of the fact that we use our network as the backbone for anything that we're doing, even in an innovative space, is that the same kinds of requirements about checking your merchants, they apply, and also the kind of fraud monitoring we do. Mobile is not a product itself. It's a functionality that you can use on any other product. So all of the typical protections that we have in place apply to those, too. And we go beyond federal protection. We require zero liability. So if a consumer is faced with a fraudulent transaction, they should have zero liability on that in the U.S. That's something that we guarantee. It doesn't matter if it's a PayPass, if it's a debit card, if it's a credit card, if it's a, you know, a fob. It's not the functionality on the card that counts. It's the fact that it's something that is running through our network that we protect and that we take seriously, that role of being a protector for consumers.
From our side, as we control the merchant on the one hand side, because every contract with the merchant is done by us, and we control the consumer on the other hand side because we own the customer as well. We have the full control of these processes. And from the legal side, for this purpose, we founded a one bank, a universal bank with an EU license to operate these services in the European Union. And with all the fraud detection and methodologies that are standard in the credit card and in the payment industry, we have one big advantage compared to others when it comes to KYC, age check, limit handling, and these things. As all these services are bits and bytes walking around, we can really check, for example, every customer. For example, cigarette vending is very, very successful in Austria, but you're not allowed to buy a cigarette when you're aged under 16. So we control the customer. Every customer has to sign up. If you sign a contract with A1, with a copy of the passport, and this copy of the passport is stored in our systems, and with this copy of the passport we can assure that this MSISDN is over 16 and we allow him to buy the cigarette. So this is a standard process.
Well, I guess,
and
with
this
that,
is online, always online. Yeah, sorry.
Oh, that's okay. I guess with that we have to wrap up. Unfortunately, in a sense, we could go on for a good deal of time here. It's fascinating. I want to thank the our panelists. I can say this is one of the most interesting panels I've been associated with. Somewhat facetiously, I wish we could lock Vic, Jody, and Dixon in a room together. I think they could work all this out, perhaps with Peter consulting. But it was very good, and please join me in thanking our panelists.